Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, October 14th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Record Halloween spending haunts consumers as chocolate and candy prices soar. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, China tightens its grip on global trade and shipping, escalating tensions amid a U.S. government shutdown. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And the strategy of ramping up tariffs, which we have watched since the beginning of this year, is it really, when you get right down to it, Paul, is China the entire ballgame? Do they hold all the cards in making sure that this tariff strategy that the White House is pursuing actually works?
Oh, hi, Rob. No, the answer to that is no, not at all. What we're seeing is the two largest economies in the world and their respective presidents starting the pre-negotiations by laying down for each other what each one thinks its leverage is. And so for China, its leverage is those rare earth metals that are so important for cell phones and all sorts of other electronic devices. And for the U.S., it's, hey, we buy a lot of things from you. We could raise our tariffs by 100%. And then we wouldn't be able to buy so much from you. So this is a question of how you're going to negotiate with one of your biggest trading partners in the second largest economy in the world. That's what we're seeing. And it's just coming at a time right before we get to tech earnings, when investors really want to see those earnings jump to justify the price gains that we've seen since May. So a lot of sensitivity.
And with the government shutdown and a lack of economic numbers and information, are equity markets more sensitive to every twist and turn in the negotiation with China, because there's little else to react to?
Well, yeah, there's truth to that. But I think the bigger picture that we want investors to remember is that there's a lot going on that creates sensitivity. Yes, the tariffs won't go away as an issue. They keep coming back. And then there's the issue of the very important issue of earnings coming out in the next few weeks, especially in the tech side. And then this government shutdown without labor market data, people are going to be parsing the guidance of these different companies that report guidance for any hint that they may be laying off or increasing their layoffs going forward. And that would weaken the labor market so further. So, yes, everything that could be worried about is being worried about right now. We really want people, though, to look ahead and see there are some trends in place that are really very strong. And they're already there. Tax cuts that we're going to get for next year, refunds for next year, deregulation, lower interest rates. There's strong CapEx spending, capital expenditure spending from AI, artificial intelligence, coming up next year. So we need to look through a lot of the noise of these worries and headlines and focus on those trends.
And then very briefly, and we do have this developing story today where the Fed indicating some rather dovish comments coming out of the Fed regarding the end of the tightening program from several years back, and that lower interest rates could be the order of the day going forward once again, though, because of what it sees as a deteriorating labor market.
Right. And the Fed's comments today are helpful. But again, it's just more headlines. The Fed was already expected widely in the futures markets to cut rates at the end of this month. And then again, one more time in December. So again, it's just headlines playing with the mood and pushing things down lower. And then in the case of the Fed, up higher again.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Coming up, want to be the neighborhood favorite? Better stock up on full-sized candy bars this Halloween.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Halloween spending is hitting record highs, and consumers are expected to shell out over $13 billion this year as chocolate and candy prices surge and pressure grows to hand out full-size bars. We welcome in Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. I do want to tackle the idea of you're being pressured now to hand out full-size candy bars. We'll take care of that next, because last year we talked about how the price of chocolate was going up and that people were going to move on to more kind of processed sugar snacks, you know, like Skittles and Starburst, just because chocolate prices were high and moving up. Are the same trends that were driving the surge in chocolate prices last year, do they exist this year?
Absolutely, Rob. And in fact, it's even worse, because you're not going to have a choice. What we're seeing is a lot of these chocolate manufacturers are already downsizing the size. So you're not going to be able to even find full-size candy bars.
So in other words, if you want to be the house that everyone likes, you're out of luck. Some people are spending $200 plus on Halloween candy. And how much of that is just the natural increase in prices that we've seen last year into this year? And how much of this is people buying the bag of Halloween candy early, then they eat everything, then they have to go back to the store?
Well, you know, in fact, I was in a couple supermarkets over the weekend, and we're seeing, you know, smaller bags of candy. In fact, there was one from Hershey's that was like $20 for a bag of these little bars. So I think that, you know, if you're buying it and you're eating it before you can give it away, you know, you're going to spend a lot more money this year. And when we look at the price of cocoa, and it's come down a little bit, but, you know, 57% of Americans are saying that higher prices are changing how much they spend on Halloween candy.
And then that's just before we talk about all the other stuff that is involved in Halloween. The spend on candy expected to be nearly $4 billion, up 11% from last year. Costumes up $4.3 billion. And I would imagine there's a lot of tariff sensitivity in costumes and Halloween decorations, both of which are expected to be up double digits on a percentage basis from 2024.
Absolutely, because especially in the case of costumes, they're all coming from China. So we've got the tariff situation. To be honest with you, if you haven't bought your costumes yet, you know, make your own, because the price is going to go up even more between now and the end of the month.
And then when it comes to people's just overall Halloween spend, there's a great deal of price sensitivity, and you're already hearing from other consumer-facing businesses, restaurants especially, that deal with value-conscious customers, that they are pulling back on just going out to eat and activities such as that. But Halloween is now one of the biggest holidays of the year as far as retail spend is concerned. It's bigger than Valentine's Day. It's not quite Christmas, but it's still a multi-billion dollar holiday every year, and people like to indulge in the celebration. So will they cut back on other aspects of their life to fund Halloween, or will Halloween be a little less spooky this year?
No, I think that, you know, Halloween this year is going to be bigger than ever, and not just from a dollar standpoint. I think with all the turmoil that's going on in the world and in the nation, people are going to be going out for Halloween to have a little fun, because these days we don't have a lot of fun.
So in other words, if you're the food company, you can say, well, of course we can raise prices on Halloween candy and other Halloween related items because we're not going to be dinged in the marketplace because of it.
Correct. You're 1,000% correct. But let's not forget, especially when it comes to chocolate and anything made with cane sugar, their costs have gone up. Now, the question is whether or not they're being a little too opportunistic at the same time. So, you know, prices are up. We're seeing smaller size packages. And the question is, you know, when we look at the year-end results, whether or not the major companies, you know, the Hershey's of the world, the Mars of the world, whether or not they're going to have record profits.
Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, Instagram promises a more PG-13 experience for their teen users.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Meta-owned Instagram is overhauling its teen experience, adopting a PG-13 approach to content after growing criticism over the app's impact on young users' mental health and well-being. Joining us to discuss is Chris Stegg, Chief Technology Officer at eGroup in Chicago. Chris, thank you for joining us today, and tell us a little bit about the PG-13 Instagram experience. What is it designed to do for younger users?
Hello, everybody. Thanks, Rob, for having me. It's to give the teens a less extreme experience when they're logged in and getting their feeds. Facebook and Meta and Instagram have had these teen accounts for about a year now, basically set up for people who admit they're under 18. If you're under 16, when you register, a parent needs to approve your sign up. They're taking this teen account to another level now, which is to, as you say, give AI the chance to look at all the content that's being posted. And then based on some PG-13 guidelines, like what they'd see in a PG-13 movie, then some content will be restricted, such as things that are posting accounts or that are posting a lot of stuff like that. They'll just won't be able to follow those accounts anymore, or they won't be able to search for terms that are like alcohol or gore or things like that, that are maybe a little less obvious than they already do with their teen accounts. That admittedly are helping people to be a little more safe. Now, the key is, will your kids admit they're 13 when they sign up?
Now, this was something that you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, and that was the easy availability of the very graphic video of the shooting death of Charlie Kirk about a month ago, and that was available on algorithmic social media feeds within minutes of the incident itself, and children, teenagers could have easily seen it. But there's some content on social media that may not fit the classical definition of R-rated or beyond, but it can still be detrimental to mental health of someone who's 13 or 14 years old. And is the AI calibrated to detect that? Is this a spirit of the law filter or a letter of the law filter?
Yeah, it's definitely the former. It's the spirit. The social media companies are under a lot of pressure. In fact, in Australia, they plan to ban social media for children under 16 all up. So I think it's a reaction to further limiting that risk of their core market being downsized. So they're trying to catch up now with these restrictions that look good on paper. But one Meta Facebook whistleblower said this is kind of likening the experience to light cigarettes, which still do damage, but a little less than the full throttle.
Well, I think, Chris, you and I are of the age, we remember what Facebook and Instagram used to be like when they started. Before, it was an algorithmic feed. It was you set up an account, you found your friends, you shared stuff among friends, and that was it. And are we getting to a point where eventually the algorithm itself is going to be restricted or even done away with entirely by governments around the world?
That's a long shot. It's big business versus the common man. I think the answer, in my opinion, would be no, because these and these platforms are driven by engagement and the ads they create. So there are still going to be a fine line as to when they turn off this content versus just restricting it and on paper. I think this is kind of like fighting a fire, forest fire with a garden hose while you're running away from it. You're just spraying randomly at stuff, Rob. The AI that these companies are going to try to use to judge PG-13 will never know the difference between what was posted by a legitimate news source, like all the Charlie Kirks, versus some evildoer who posts something similar from their account. All they're looking for is accounts that do it regularly. So CBS, CNN, WBBM, all the news feeds that show Charlie Kirk's feed, those would still be legit versus those who are outright nasty. Those may be blocked, but it's going to be very, very tricky based on the volume of content and the rules they have to set them up.
Chris Stegg, Chief Technology Officer with eGroup in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, worried about your passport application? We'll break down what travelers should expect during the government shutdown.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets are mixed this afternoon. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director of Clearstead Advisors in New York. Jim, thank you for joining us today. Lots of news to move the markets, starting off with the latest trade tensions in China. And then you have the Fed coming out with more dovish comments backing up the futures market's belief that interest rate cuts are more than just a one-off this year. So what is pulling greater weight with investors today?
Well, you basically, on the negative side, as you said, you have the China trade tensions, but I think investors subtly believe that it's all a part of a big negotiation and that everybody loses if we don't settle this. So while the China news is unsettling, I don't think that will be enduring. The chairman's remarks today indicated there's, you know, very almost a certainty that you're going to get another interest rate cut. But after that, it depends on what data they get and what that data says. The market's pricing in another four or five cuts. That may be overly optimistic, but the market is taking encouragement from the fact that you're going to get one more, on top of the fact that we're on the cusp of a good earnings report season, which started off this week with actually today with the banks. And the banks, not only were the numbers good, but their commentary on the outlook for the economy and the consumer and the credit markets was on balance favorable. So I think what we've experienced over the last couple of days is just a little bit of an air pocket after a terrific run in the markets.
What are some of the highlights of the bank's third quarter earnings calls, and do they carry greater weight today, especially with the lack of official numbers from the government because of the shutdown?
Yeah, well, relative to the fact that we're not getting numbers to because of the shutdown, of course, that shifts the onus back onto earnings. And the bank earnings, as I said, they were very sanguine. They were not blowout, but they were solid, and they were beats. Of course, some of it was on the trading side, which is non-recurring, but the basic underlying numbers were good. There is a little bit of concern in the markets about a few of the bankruptcies that have gone on and what the implications are for the credit markets, but the commentary today is that so far that is not systemic and that they seem to be one-offs. Now, we will roll into technology company earnings over the next couple of weeks, and I think those earnings will be even more important than what the Fed is likely to do, which is one more interest rate cut.
And then, Jim, when it comes to working out a new trade deal with China, the consensus seems to be a lot of the back and forth is just both sides establishing their negotiating positions. But when the larger tariffs were announced back in April and that the U.S. was going to seek trade deals with countries all over the world, it seems like the U.S.-China trade negotiations, that's Game 7 of the World Series compared to all of the other trade negotiations taking place.
Yeah, that's true, and it's those negotiations are critically important for both economies, for the Chinese at least as much as for us, which leads me to believe that there will be a lot of posturing, a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiation, but that there's no choice but to settle things somewhere down the middle, and I think the markets will take comfort in that ultimately.
Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, some need-to-know advice on getting a passport during the government shutdown.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's Travel Tuesday. Passport processing continues despite the government shutdown, but experts warn delays could grow if it drags on, especially for travelers who are needing expedited service. Joining us with some key advice is Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, Arizona. Angie, thank you for joining us today. Travel Tuesday is sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. And when we talk about getting that passport processed, you really need to make sure you have it 6 months before the expiration date, especially if you're traveling soon.
That's true. And you have to be mindful of, are you a first-time passport holder? Are you needing passports for children? Those will require that you meet in person. So you're right. You do want to plan ahead. If you already have that passport, you want to review it and make sure that you have at least 6 months of additional coverage beyond your travel dates, which is often required for travel to many countries.
Now, in my experience, when I got passports for the kids, we either had to go to the post office or the library to do the in-person inspection of the documents and the pictures with the kids. And is that still going on today? And what kind of a window of time should you really build in for that overseas trip?
I would be planning 3 to 6 months in advance. Yes, there's ways to expedite your passport, but if you're a first-time passport holder or you have children, you need to meet in person at a passport agency office. Like you said, they're often inside postal services. I would go to travel.state.gov. There's a wealth of information, and based on your address, it will help guide you where to find the closest location for you to go ahead and get your passport paperwork started.
Now, I will tell you a story from the Rob Hart Bonehead files, and that was several years ago, well, now a dozen years ago. I left my passport in my shorts after we came back from a trip, and said passport was washed in the washing machine. And then I found out very shortly before we were going on another trip that a passport washed in the washing machine was considered destroyed in the eyes of the government, ours, and others. So I had to get one very quickly, and that required going to the federal building downtown to the passport office to get one turned around that afternoon. I would imagine I'm not the only person who has ever done this in the history of travel. And if you find yourself in such dire straits, what can you do during a government shutdown to get that passport turned around and quick?
It requires an appointment. And yes, those appointments are available, but you do have to be persistent. And by all means, there's never going to be a guarantee. So I always recommend that people make double check their passports at the time that they plan their trips to avoid that from happening. And really do ask a lot of questions. If you are in a situation where you feel that your passport has been damaged, you are definitely going to want to consider getting that replaced. And there are the 14-day appointments, of course, where you can, within 14 days prior to travel, look for the opportunity for a same-day appointment. But that usually, in times like this, when we do have shutdowns, it's going to be prioritized for those that are traveling for emergency purposes. For example, a sick family member or a death in the family. Separately, I would also highly recommend, particularly knowing that we might have some issues with turnaround time, there is the expedited service. So that typically will get your passport within the 6-week time frame. And another tidbit for ensuring that you get that expedited passport quickly is if you ensure that you provide the 2-day or even sooner turnaround time frame for them to ship it back to you with tracking mechanisms.
And of course, if you want to avoid the anxiety and sense of urgency surrounding an expedited passport request, especially in times like this, Angie, when you come home from your last trip, just put the passport in a safe place. Take it out of your pocket immediately and don't put it in the washing machine.
Yes, yeah, safeguard it. If you have a safe at home, that's where I would store your passports, or in a bank safe. And then make it a situation where if it's husband and wife, or you have another travel companion, or just ask a friend, you know, review those passwords. It's very, very easy to unfortunately overlook something, but you don't want to put yourself in that stressful situation where your trip investment could be impacted by your ability to travel without a valid passport.
Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale. Find her online, travelbta.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, a 10-minute EV charge could finally spark mainstream electric adoption.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
ChargePoint, the operator of the largest network of independently owned EV charging stations, says it's rolling out a 10-minute charge by next year, tackling the industry's biggest hurdle to widespread electric vehicle adoption. We're joined by Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter based in Detroit. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And as a newly minted EV owner, Jeff, this is a very interesting topic because one of the challenges that I have discovered from EV ownership, and it's kind of part of the fun of owning an EV, is trying to play the charging game. I mean, obviously, you save the most money by just charging your EV at home. Even if you plug it into a standard wall socket, you get about 40 miles of charge per night. But if you really want to fill up fast, there's the network of superchargers. Tesla has a number of them. The fastest Tesla supercharger can give you a 500-kilowatt charge. But ChargePoint now rolling out a new charger next year that can give you 600 kilowatts of juice that can fill up your car in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, and the devil here may be in the details because I'm not sure how backwards compatible this is. I'm not sure if you can take the EV that you just bought and get it filled up in 10 minutes, because a lot when it comes to fast charging depends on the architecture of the EV. I think what this really is a good sign that long-term we're heading in that direction, but I don't want people to get so excited that they're going to be able to take their EV today and, you know, charge it as fast as you can fill up with a tank of gasoline.
Yeah, because right now, even if there's a network of Tesla superchargers not too far from my home, and one Saturday morning I tried to see if one was available. They weren't. There was just a line of Teslas all up and down with people inside, and you're reading a book, checking their phone, just hanging out for 30 minutes, because that's how long it takes to get a close to full charge at a supercharger. But reducing that charging time, let's say if you're on a road trip, from 40 minutes to an hour to 10, really does change the long-term math of who can buy an EV and what you can use that EV for.
Exactly. And as I said, this is something nice that is pointing us in that direction. I just don't want current EV owners to become overexcited about their being able to do it. But what this does is it shows that EVs are starting to become more and more practical. And now that the incentive is gone, we're seeing EVs that have to compete head-to-head with gasoline-powered vehicles. And this is one area where currently they can't compete. And everything that moves us in that direction moves us closer to a future where EVs are more mainstream.
And even with the end of the EV credit, there are just so many EVs on the road now. I mean, the impending disappearance of the EV tax credit just got a lot of people to purchase an EV or lease an EV. And now with so many EVs on the road, it's a lucrative market, even if the tax credit has gone away.
Absolutely. And it will continue to be. And, you know, for people who have the EVs today, they are marvelous commuter vehicles. If you're just driving back and forth to work and you're not going on long trips, that, you know, they can be a great buy, especially with some of those discounts that we had beforehand. And a lot of the discounts have continued right now. And if this shows that we're moving in the way to being able to recharge an EV as fast as we can fill up with gasoline, that truly will be the holy grail. So I see this as pointing to that direction, but we're not there yet.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter based in Detroit. Thank you for joining us today.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.